start out this evening, I want to start out by making a correction. Any of you ever made a mistake? Well, just bear with me, because I've been known to make them from time to time, you understand. In the teaching last week, I was looking at my footnote and did it in rather hurriedly. And I told you that I think it was the name Simeon meant hated, and that is not true. The name Simeon means God hears, or hearing. And actually, I was looking at the whole sentence, and what was said was God hears me, God has heard, or whatever, because I'm not loved, and the not loved is what meant hated, not His name. So I want to get that corrected to begin with. And so by giving you this sheet, that'll help clear up my mistakes, okay? So, too, I thought that might be beneficial to you in the future to refer to. Also, there was a legitimate question asked last week, and I would like to just put this before the class because I think it was a good enough question that everyone should hear it, and it dealt with Jacob and Esau, and we talked about how Esau sold his birthright, and the question was asked, was he rejected because of his actions? And the answer to that was no. If you'll remember, Rebekah, their mother, while she was pregnant with him, you understand that Jacob and Esau are twins. And while she was pregnant and there was the struggling going on the inside of her, and she went to God and she said, God, you know, if this pregnancy is of you, what's going on? And he told her that there were two nations in her womb and that the older would serve the younger. So before they were ever born, he says, you get over in the New Testament, it says, Jacob have I loved and Esau have I hated. In the comparison, you understand. So it wasn't because of his actions. God knew what his actions would be before, I suppose. But the bottom line was, God had already announced what would take place. And Esau just followed the pattern of the course, okay? Now, in your study guide, there's several things that I didn't put in that you may want to put just write in or whatever, dealing with various chapters of Genesis. And if you look at page 7 at R, we talked about chapters 37 through 50 recording the lives and time of Joseph. And there's one exception to that, and that's chapter 38. And chapter 38 actually describes an incident in Judah's life. And that's where I want to begin this evening with Genesis chapter 38. And I'm going to tell you, there are so many things in the Bible that reveal the mercy of God to us and how God operates. Now, one important thing I want you to remember right now is that the law has not been given. Moses has not yet been born. So just remember that, okay? So when we get into chapter 38, it talks about it. In verse 1, it says, it came to pass at that time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua, and he married her and went into her. And she conceived and bore a son. He called his name Ur. Now notice he's married a Canaanite woman. Who did the lineage come, Jesus' lineage, who did it pass through? Judah. Now just bear that in mind. Now he's married to a Canaanite woman here. She gives birth to this son and called his name Er. She conceived again and bore a son, and she called his name Onan. And she conceived yet again and bore a son and called his name Shelah. He was at Shezib, or something to that effect, when she bore him. Then Judah took a wife for his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. Now, you need to remember that name, okay? But Judah's firstborn son, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord killed him. I know a lot of people say the Lord doesn't kill, but He did. Okay? I didn't write it, and I'm not going to try to misinterpret it. I'm just going to tell you how it reads, all right? And Judah said to Onan, go into your brother's wife and marry her and raise up an heir to your brother. Now, this was the custom. This was the tradition of the time. If your brother died, then you went into his wife, and that child that was born took that brother's name, and the inheritance became his. And the name kept on going, you know, in the family, so the family name wasn't lost. Well, Onan, verse 9 says, Onan knew that the heir would not be his, and it came to pass when he went into his brother's wife that he omitted on the ground, lest he should give an heir to his brother. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord, therefore he killed him also. Then Judah said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow in your father's house till my son Shelah is grown. For he said, lest he also die like his brothers. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. Now, let me just bring out a couple points here, and I'm not advocating anything. You know, some people can get all hung up on the age difference in marriages, and it never did bother God, you understand. Said probably still doesn't. And the fact here is this woman has gone home to live with her daddy until this boy grows up and gets old enough to become her husband. Interesting, huh? That's all I'll say about that, but just thought I'd plant that seed in there, okay? And just tell you not to get hung up on a lot of stuff that you don't need to be hung up on. Verse 12 says, now in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died, and Judah was comforted and went up to his sheep shears at Timnah, he and his friend Hur the Adullamite. And it was told Tamar, saying, look, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep. So she took off her widow's garments, covered herself with a veil and wrapped herself and sat in an open place which was on the way to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah was grown and she was not given to him as a wife. In other words, Judah has not kept the word, and this woman does not have a son, and there's no inheritance to this woman. She should be taken care of, and her father is the one having to take care of her at this particular point in time. So she has an idea. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot because she had covered her face. Then he turned to her by the way and said, please let me come in to you. For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. So she said, what will you give me that you may come in to me? And he said, I will send a young goat from the flock. So she said, will you give me a pledge till you send it? Then he said, what pledge shall I give you? So she said, your signet and cord and your staff that is in your hand. Then he gave them to her and went into her, and she conceived by him. You understand, this is his daughter-in-law. Now, don't think that God's approving of Judah looking for a prostitute, okay? Because, I mean, God's not approving of that. Now, there's some interesting things in the Bible if you'll get in there and read and get rid of your religious head, okay? And you can learn some things out of this. And that's all he's doing. He just thinks that this girl's just a prostitute he's going into. She's there to get a seed. You understand? Her intent is to get a seed. His intent is to satisfy himself. Difference. So she's asking for the pledge and all this. Verse 19 says, so she arose and went away, laid aside her veil, and put on the garments of her widowhood. And Judah sent the young goat by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite. You understand, he wasn't ashamed of what he did. He's just saying, hey, look, take this goat to that prostitute down there. You know, I owe this to her. And I don't think this guy was dumb. He said to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he did not find her. Then he asked the men of that place, said, where is the harlot who was openly by the roadside? And they said, there was no harlot in this place. So he returned to Judah and said, I cannot find her. Also the men of the place said, there was no harlot in this place. Then Judah said, let her take them for herself, lest we be shamed. For I sent this young goat, and you have not found her. And it came to pass about 3 months after that Judah was told, saying, Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has played the harlot. Furthermore, she is with child by harlotry. So Judah said, bring her out and let her be burned. Now think about that. He's forgotten that he had paid a prostitute, hadn't he? I mean, you know, a double standard, right? This old girl was smart. Verse 25, when she was brought out, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, by the man to whom these belong, I am with child. And she said, please determine whose these are, the signet and cord and staff. So Judah acknowledged them and said, she has been more righteous than I, because I did not give her to Shelah my son, and he never knew her again. Now it came to pass at the time for giving birth that, behold, twins were in her womb. And so it was when she was giving birth that the one put out his hand, the midwife took a scarlet thread and bound it on his hand, saying, this one came out first. Then it happened as he drew back his hand that his brother came out unexpectedly. And she said, how did you break through? This breach be upon you, therefore his name was called Perez. That name means a breaking forth. Afterwards, his brother came out who had the scarlet thread on his hand, and his name was called Zerah. Now, why do you think that was recorded in the Bible? You understand, God's just showing us something in all this. The devil will try to accuse us and to make us think that God can't use us, and this can't happen and that can't happen. Now, although God doesn't approve of sin in any way, form, or fashion, God is a forgiver of sin. And I believe that's the message that's being conveyed here, as well as there is not a double standard. It's not good for the man and bad for the woman, you understand. You remember the woman taken in adultery and brought to Jesus, and they said, look, we caught this woman in the very act. Well, why didn't they have the man? If they caught her in the very act, the man had to be there, right? So they let him go scot-free, a double standard here. God is not wanting a double standard in our lives. And I think that is one of the reasons that this is recorded here. He's ready to burn her for doing what he did. Now, you just remember the Word of God teaches us that with the judgment we judge, that's how we're judged. So we should judge in mercy, shouldn't we? I'm not talking about condoning sin. And it's interesting that Jesus came through Judah. Something, isn't it? All right, that's all I'll say about that. But I felt like that needed to be isolated and talked about directly, okay? And we need to learn to just speak directly and speak plainly. If the Bible records it, then He's not wanting us to sugarcoat it and water it down and trying to make it look like nothing. It's there for a reason. Now, when we go into chapter 39, we see that Joseph, now you understand Joseph's already been sold by his brothers into slavery. And when you go into chapter 39, these Ishmaelites that bought Joseph, they have him up for sale, and Potiphar buys him as his slave. So Joseph becomes a slave in Potiphar's house. Now, after a while, Potiphar's observing this guy, and he's saying, this guy's not your average slave, you understand. And he puts Joseph, ultimately, he puts him over the entire household. It said that Potiphar, only thing he knew is what he ate. I mean, he didn't even know what was going on. This man trusted Joseph. God gave him favor, you understand. God gave Joseph favor. Now, God has a plan that's going on at this particular time. You know the dream that Joseph received when he was a teenager? That's God's plans to fulfill this dream. But boy, it's an unusual way to do it. Not the way I would do it, but then I'm not God, right? Aren't you glad? So anyway, we find that Joseph is a man of integrity, and the Bible teaches us here in this 37th chapter, the 6th verse, that Joseph was a handsome man. Good-looking man. And Potiphar's wife started laying eyes on Joseph. And then she was trying to entice him, and she says, come on, boy, go to bed with me, you know. And Joseph says, look. He says, you know, my master has put everything in this house in my charge. The only thing he's withheld from me is you, and how could I sin against him? Now that's integrity, isn't it? And she constantly, when he would come in to do the business and keep the books and that type thing, she would constantly badger him, trying to seduce him. And one day there was no one in the house but the two of them, and she grabbed his robe. And he ran and left her holding his robe. And then she had an idea. And then she started saying, this man tried to rape me. And then she told the servant, she said, look what's happened. My husband brought this slave in here, and now he's tried to rape me. And so when the husband got home, she went through all this deal. Now, obviously, he was furious, and Joseph was innocent. And what happened? He threw him in prison. Did he deserve to be in prison? No. He hadn't done anything wrong, had he? But look what happens when he's thrown into prison. The man over the prison starts looking at Joseph. He said, this guy's a good guy, and he puts all the prisoners under Joseph's charge. To where any activity that was going on in the prison, Joseph was in charge of it. This man was destined to succeed, wasn't he? I mean, boy, the call of God was on his life. And he kept a positive attitude, even though he'd been lied against, falsely accused, and thrown into prison, he still kept a good attitude, and he did a good job, you understand? Now, I'm going to tell you something. I believe there's a principle in there that we need to glean out of this. Have you ever been wrongly accused? Have you, anybody ever taken advantage of you? If you've lived long enough, they have, and you live longer, and they will. Right? The bottom line is to keep a good attitude, and even under the false accusations, you don't try to vindicate yourself. Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord, right? So here Joseph is going about his chores, and he's doing a good job, and then two of the king's servants are cast into prison. He was displeased with the butler and the baker, and he had them thrown into prison. Now, we don't know all the detail of this, of why they went into prison. But evidently, they rubbed the king the wrong way, you understand. And Joseph, in the process of taking care of the prisoners, one day he goes in and he looks at these guys, and their countenance is down. They're sad. He says, "What's wrong with you guys?" They said, "Well, each one of us had a dream last night. And we don't have anybody to interpret the dream." Now, Joseph said, "Well, tell me. Interpretation comes from God, you know. Tell me your dream." So the butler tells him his dream. Now, I'm not going to give you verbatim. You can read this. But the essence is he saw this vine blossom. It had three branches, and then the grapes, and he took the grapes. He had Pharaoh's cup, and he squeezed the grapes into the cup, and then he gave the cup to the king. Joseph said, "All right, here's the interpretation of that. In 3 days, the king is going to reinstate you to your butlership, and once again, you'll serve wine to the king." Now, the baker says, "That sounds good. Let me tell you my dream. I was also in my dreams," what he was saying. He said, "I had three baskets on my head of all these baked goods, and the birds came and started eating these baked goods off my head." Joseph said, "Well, here's the interpretation. In 3 days, the king's going to lift your head from you, and the birds are going to be cones." I can't say that day. That would not have my countenance at all. But the bottom line was, 3 days, the butler was reinstated. In 3 days, the butler hanged. Joseph said, "Remember me, sir. When you get back to the king, don't forget me." What happened? Out of sight, out of mind. And he forgets. All about Joseph here, Joseph is still innocent. You know, Joseph keeps talking about it. Well, in chapter 41, Pharaoh has a dream. And he can't find anybody to interpret his dream. The butler says, "I remember my boss. When you met the baker and me, he had a strong business in there. And the friend who asked the dream said, he said, and the baker had a dream." He said, "What's funny, man?" So, you know, this is something interesting. When I read this in chapter 41, look at verse 14. "When they sent for Joseph, they brought him quickly out of the dungeon. His chief, hanging his clothes, came to Pharaoh." Now, that just struck me today when I was reading this. If you go to the presence of the king, you don't look sloppy. I mean, you clean yourself, shave your clothes right. I'm telling you right now, you get in the presence of God, you better be clean. Amen? Like standing with God. What we're talking about is that. When he comes into the presence of Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, "Look, I hear you can interpret dreams." Now, you understand I'm paraphrasing all this. He says, "I hear you can interpret dreams." Joseph said, "Well, God's the giver of the dreams, of the interpretation." He says, "You just tell me the dream, and God's going to give you the interpretation." That's faith. He hasn't even heard the dream yet, has he? So Pharaoh tells him his dream. He said, "Actually, I had two. In the first dream," he said, "I saw these cows. There's seven of them. They come up, they're real fat. And I mean, they look good. Everything's going fine. Should I read this?" or butcher it. But note then in verse 18, he says, suddenly seven cows came up out of the river, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. And then behold, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such ugliness as I have never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the first seven, the fat cows. And when they'd eaten them up, no one would have known they'd eaten them, for they were just as ugly as at the beginning. So I woke. And then he says, I had another dream. He said, this time seven heads of came up on one stalk, full and good. And then he said, seven heads withered thin and blighted by the east wind spring up after them, and the thin heads devoured the seven good heads. He said, I told this to my magicians, but no one could explain it to me. So Joseph told him, he said, look, the dreams are one in the same, and God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. Now, doesn't that interest you that God would show a heathen king what he's about to do? God used Nebuchadnezzar, didn't he? God used Pharaoh. Let me tell you something. I've heard people say, I was in a church one night, and they had a big discussion. You know, they opened the service up for discussion, which is always dangerous. And they had a big discussion of whether or not God used an unclean vessel. And the pastor was saying, absolutely not, it can't. And my thought is, you better read about Balaam and the donkey. I mean, what's more unclean than a donkey? If you didn't redeem that boy, you broke his neck. That's how unclean he was, and yet God spoke through that. God spoke through Caiaphas, who prophesied concerning that Jesus would die for the nations, didn't he? And I promise you, Caiaphas wasn't clean. So it's interesting. God can speak and use people that don't serve God. Do you understand? The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. He says He created the waster to destroy, didn't he? So we can be a vessel of honor or we can be a vessel of dishonor, can't we? Well, anyway, he chooses to show all this to Pharaoh. And he says, here's what's going to happen. Joseph's interpreting the dream. He says, these are 7 years. God's showing you something here. He said, the seven cows, the 7 years, are dealing with 7 years. They're going to, did I say years or ears? The seven cows, the seven fat cows, and the seven good ears are 7 years of plenty throughout the land. He said that's going to be followed by 7 years of famine. And he said the famine is going to be so great that you will forget the plenty that was previous. Interesting, isn't it? And he said, now let me get, I'm paraphrasing again. He says, now let me tell you what I think you should do. I think you should get you a man wise and discreet, and during the 7 years of plenty, you should take a fifth part and put it in storage bins, so when the plenty's over and the famine comes, then you can distribute food. Pharaoh says, well now, who's wiser than this guy that's telling us all this? He said, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to make you number two in command. He said, only on the throne will I have more power than you. Boy, the stage is being set for the dream to be fulfilled, isn't it? Let me tell you something in all this. God gives you a dream, don't turn it loose. God puts something in your heart, don't turn it loose. You think the circumstances weren't adverse to Joseph? I mean, how could the dream come true? You going into slavery? You're going into slavery, you're going to be a slave in somebody's house, and you're still thinking about your brothers bowing down to you? A slave? I don't think he ever cast away his confidence in God, you understand? Kept a cheerful counsel, a good attitude, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, didn't he? Despising the shame. Well, that's the key to our success, is not look where we are, just keep focused on where we're going. Don't lay your dream down. Don't cast away your confidence. Now, this is what happens here, and they appoint Joseph to be the one who distributes all this food. Now, this famine, it happened just like Joseph said. And they built various storehouses or bins or whatever in the various cities, and they collected all this. And matter of fact, it said they collected so much he stopped counting because he couldn't count it all. And then it said the 7 years of plenty was past, and the famine started, and the people of the land started knocking on the door. Help us. Pharaoh says, go see Joseph. That's the man. Don't talk to me. Talk to Joseph. That's delegated authority and staying with it, isn't it? Well, the famine was so severe that it had affected Israel. Here's Jacob and all these sons. They're affected by it. And Jacob says, look, boys, I hear that there's food in Egypt. You guys go down and get us some food. We can buy from them. They said, well, that sounds like a good deal, but he wouldn't let Benjamin go. So he sent these guys down, and they visit Egypt. And who do you have to go to get the food but Joseph? And what do they do but bow? Not knowing that this man could speak Hebrew. So Joseph, he started questioning them and asking them things about their family. Does your father live? He's fishing, you understand. He's wanting to know things about his family. But he's not wanting to expose himself yet. I mean, these guys need to be tested a little bit, right? And so he asked them these various questions. And then he sells them the food. And then they get into trouble. Don't they? Why don't we just read this and just go along and look at this. It talks about Joseph was governor over the land. I just mentioned this. He was 30 years old, it says, when he stood before Pharaoh and interpreted the dreams and all that. Now remember, God gave him the dream at 17, somewhere around there, and now he's 30 years old. So don't think that everything God puts in your heart is going to manifest in a day or two, a month or two, or a year or two necessarily. You just stay with it. Well, anyway, Joseph's 10 brothers go down to get this grain. It says he's the governor of the land, and they bowed before him. And then verse 9 says, Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them, and he told them, he said, you're spies. Might as well have a little fun with it, right? For whatever reason. He said, you've come to see the nakedness of the land. They said, no, my lord. Excuse me. They said, we're all one man's sons. We're honest men. Your servants are not spies. But he said to them, he said, you've come to check the land out. You've come to see how barren the land is. And they said, look, we're 12 brothers. The son of one man, he lives in the land of Cana, and the youngest is with our father today, and the other one, he doesn't exist anymore. And Joseph said to him, he said, since I spoke to you, you're spies. He said, now here's how I'm going to test you. By the life of Pharaoh, boy, this is a test, you shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. He said, send one of you and let him bring your brother and you shall be kept in prison. And he says, I'm going to test your words to see if there's any truth in you. He says, or else by the life of Pharaoh, you're spies. Now, you know, he put all these boys in prison for 3 days. I mean, they might as well taste a little bit of it, see what it's like, you know. So he puts them in prison for 3 days, and then on the third day, he said, look, do this and live. He said, I fear God. He said, if you're honest men, just one of you stay here. We'll just keep one of you in prison. The rest of you can go home and feed your families. But don't you come back without your youngest brother with you. You understand, Joseph's wanting to see his blood brother, Benjamin, isn't he? And he says, if you do that, then you know everything will be verified and I'll know you're not spies. So they said, truly we're guilty concerning our brother. Now Joseph understands what they're saying and they don't know it. He said, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore the distress has come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, did I not speak to you, saying, did not sin against the boy? Now that was an eye-opener to Joseph. He gets a little more insight. Oh, Reuben stood up for me. So he said, behold, his blood is now required of us. It says they didn't know that Joseph understood them because he spoke to them through an interpreter. And he had to get out of their sight there because it broke him, you know, he wept. And then he came back and he talked with them and he took Simeon from them and bound them before their eyes. And I was trying to figure out why he took Simeon, and really still don't know why, but he was elected for whatever reason, okay? And then Joseph told the guy that was working for him, he said, fill their sacks and restore every man's money in his sack and give them what provisions they need for. God does this, and the steward of his house. So they loaded their donkeys with the grain, departed from there. But when they started to camp, and they took their sacks down and to get the grain to feed the donkeys, they opened their sack up, and their money was in there, and their heart sunk. They thought, man, what is going on? Look at what it says here. Verse 28 says, my money has been restored, and there it is in my sack. Then their hearts failed them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? So they went back home to Jacob in Canaan. They told him everything that had happened to them. And they said, the man who is lord of the land spoke roughly to us and took us for spies of the country. He said, well, we told him we're honest men. We're not spies. We're 12 brothers, sons of one father. One is no more, and the youngest is with our father this day in the land of Canaan. And then they goes on and tells them what Joseph had told them, that they couldn't come back down to the land to get any more food without bringing Benjamin with them. And it says, we emptied our sacks and we found our money. And Jacob said to him, he said, look, you bereaved me of one son. Joseph's no more. And Simeon's no more. He's in prison. And he said, now you want to take Benjamin? All these things are against me. Now I want you to look at this. This is profound. Reuben spoke to his father saying, kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. He said, put him in my hands. I will bring him back to you. Jacob said, he's not going with you. The boy is not going to Egypt. He's going to stay here. He said, I don't want calamity to fall him. Why? That's the only thing he has left of Rachel. Isn't it? So he's really wanting to hold to that. Well, when you get into verse 43, chapter 43, they've run out of food. And Jacob says, look, go on down to Egypt and buy food. Judah said, we can't go to Egypt and buy food without Benjamin going with us. He said, if you're not going to send Benjamin, we're not going down. No, we're not crazy. And Jacob said, why did you deal with me like that? Why in the world did you tell the man about your family? He's getting upset. Why did you tell him you had another brother? They said because he asked specific questions. Now, that's really why they told you. Go in here and read this. He asked some specific questions. And what you're getting is just a general summary in the previous remarks. It said, how could we know that he would ask us to bring our brother down? Now, look at this. Judah said to his father, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go that we may live and not die. Both we and you and also our little ones, I myself will be surety for him. Wasn't Judah the one that said, let's get some money out of this boy? Somebody can help me out on that. We'll look during the break. But I think it was Judah the one that says, let's sell him rather than kill him. But anyway, he says, I'll be surety for him. If I don't bring him back, then I'll bear the blame forever. He said, if we'd not delayed and we'd, you'd have gone on and released Benjamin to us, we could have already been back by now. So Israel, or Jacob, he says, well, if it has to be that way, then I guess it has to be that way. Take the best fruits. Look, let's give this guy a gift. Take the best fruits of the land. Take him some pistachio nuts and almonds. And he said, take double money in your hand and return the money to him. He said, it was probably an oversight, you know, and let's make up for it. And take your brother and go on. And he said, God Almighty give you mercy before the man that he may release your other brother and Benjamin. And he says, if I'm bereaved, I'm bereaved. Isn't it interesting that Jacob didn't hold anybody accountable for Benjamin? Yet Reuben was willing to be accountable, and also Judah was willing to be accountable, wasn't he? So you see a change of heart with these guys. So these guys went back down, these brothers went to Egypt with Benjamin. They took their money and they stood before Joseph again. And when Joseph saw Benjamin, he told the steward of the house, he said, take these men to my home and and kill an animal and prepare it. And he said, these guys are going to have dinner with me, or lunch, however you prefer. Then the men did it as Joseph ordered, and they brought these brothers into Joseph's house. It says these guys were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house, and they said it's because of the money. Man, I mean, you understand their head is giving them a fit. They're haunted by their past, aren't they? That hasn't changed, has it? Unless God delivers us. And so they come in, and they said, look, he's going to make a case against us and seize us, and we're going to be slaves. And so when they drew near to the steward of Joseph's house, they talked with him, and they said, look, we came down to buy food, and when we camped and opened our bags, we found that there was an oversight. For some reason, there was money in our sacks. And he said, look, we brought the money back, and we want to give it to you. We don't know how it got there. And I like what the steward says here. He says, peace be with you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money. Well, he did. He just restored it, didn't he? So he brought Simeon out of prison and to join them. And they went into Joseph's house, and they gave them water and so they could wash their feet, and he fed their donkeys. And then they made their present ready to give to Joseph. And when they found out they were going to be eating there, Joseph came home, and they presented the present to him and bowed down to the earth. Interesting, isn't it? Then he asked them about their well-being. Is your father well? In other words, how's daddy, boys? But he's not saying that yet. Is he still alive? And they answered that he's in good health, still alive. And they bowed their heads down and prostrated themselves. Then he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son. And he said, is this your younger brother of whom you spoke to me? And he said, God be gracious to you, my son. And it says his heart yearned for his brother, so he had to get out quickly so they wouldn't see him cry. And then he wept and washed his face and came back, and he said, serve the bread. Now, don't you know this blew these boys away? So he sent, they sent him a place by himself, and then the Egyptians were by themselves because Egyptians couldn't eat with Hebrews. It was disgusting to the Egyptians. And so then they seated these brothers according to their birthright, the firstborn down to the youngest. And it said the men looked in astonishment at one another. That'd get your attention, wouldn't it? All these coincidences. It says then he took servings of food, and set before them. And Benjamin's serving was five times as much as any of theirs. I thought, how could the boy eat all that food? Excuse me, five times as much. I believe Joseph's testing them to see if there's any jealousy going on in the camp here. I think he's checking these boys out and he's taking notes. Now, this is a good stopping place, and it's about break time, so we'll pick back up with chapter 44 after the break.